For WILL, I'm Victoria Shepherd, and this is the Mid-American Gardener podcast, where we love to talk about anything connected to gardening in central Illinois. My guest today is Chuck Voigt, who is not just one of the expert panelists on the MAG-TV live show. He has also been an academic professional on the faculty of the Departments of Horticulture, then Natural Resources and Environmental Sciences, and finally Crop Sciences at the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign. Chuck has been a member of the International Herb Association since 1991 and is a member of the Herb Society of America. As many of you know, he also loves vegetables, which is what we're going to talk about today, specifically planning for next year's veggie garden. Hi, Chuck.
Hello. Oh,
thank you so much for coming in.
It was not that big a problem. Beautiful day, although a little chilly.
It is a little chilly. So what are you doing right now in your garden?
Well, I'm still doing some cleanup work. Seems like there are inevitable weeds that escape my ministrations. And this summer, when we got into the hot and humid and up in Kankakee County where I garden, it was very, very dry at that same time. And so it was kind of demoralizing. So some things got a little away from me. And so I've been mowing off some things and hoeing off some things and just trying to get things
put neat and tidy.
Put together so that it's not a huge headache next spring. Because it's good to have some of those things out of the way. When we get that first little blink of warm weather and the soil starts to dry out and we want to get in those really early spring things, it doesn't take too long to get it done then.
So between once you finish your fall cleanup and the spring things coming to life, with regards to your vegetable garden, what are you doing or what are you going to be doing in between that time?
Well, I'll probably be looking at catalogs. Each year they seem to come a little bit earlier. I just got an announcement that one of them is just about ready to be shipped. It used to come out after Christmas so they didn't get tied up in the Christmas card rush. But I'm not sure the Christmas card rush is what it once was. And at any rate, they've gone back to, you know, Thanksgiving or even before Thanksgiving trying to get them out so they're in people's hands so they can kind of look at them, decide what they need to do.
Now, are these seed catalogs?
Well, the seed catalogs, some of them also have nursery stock and other things in them as well. And, you know, if you're a dedicated gardener, you just kind of look at it all and kind of dream and try not to get too far ahead of yourself and what I call my mind can write checks that my back can't cash.
Now, do you buy seeds and then start them indoors during the winter months?
Not too much. I don't know. I really meant to build a little greenhouse when I retired. I had friends who, one of them who sells greenhouses, who advised me not to do that because it becomes like having a dairy herd where you're kind of tied to it. Because somebody has to water and somebody has to open the vents if it starts to overheat, and there's just so many things to do. So to this point, I haven't done that. It would certainly be nice, you know, long about the end of February and start of March, to get in there and get some things going so that we can shorten the season of things happening. Because that's the other reason why you like to peruse the seed catalogs is that the variety selection is so much better.
Mm-hmm.
I've been kind of saddened that the garden center offerings seem to have gotten fewer. They all seem to have the same seed displays with the same selections in them. And so your choices, if you go out and start doing seed shopping, at least from my perspective, I realize I'm very variety conscious on things where other people, you know, if they find a sweet basil, life is good, or if they find a tomato that looks good, it's fine. But for me, that's not enough. And really, the only way to get a really good seed selection is to do catalogs or, you know, the 21st century version of that, which is go online.
And
almost everybody's catalog is online now too. So sadly, I found that if I shop online, I tend to buy way more because I'll say, well, I'll put that in the cart.
It's too easy.
I'll put that in the cart, and then I'll delete it later if I need to. And nothing ever – seldom, you know, things seldom get deleted, so I end up buying everything I thought I might want, which is what I was trying to avoid. So,
but when you get the actual catalogs, good old-fashioned catalogs in the mail, you can flick through them and put a little post-it or turn the page over at things that might interest you, right?
Sure.
And then when you get to that point, do you then create a sort of list, and do you do a garden plan, draw it out as to what should people do to enable them not to get too much, many things. They don't get trigger happy with the buying.
Well, I think all of those things. One thing they can do yet this fall is go out and look at their plot and kind of reminisce about what was where.
Because
it's a good idea to try to not follow a crop with another crop in the same plant family.
So does that come under the crop rotation thing?
Yes. Yes. You want to... As much as you can, you know, in a small home vegetable garden plot, I realize that that's not altogether feasible, but you need to keep it in mind and try not to have things in exactly the same place they were the year before. I understand some people have one little six-foot section along the driveway is the only place that's got enough sunlight for tomatoes, and I understand that, but it's one of those things where ultimately diseases are probably going to be a problem. But going back to just looking at the plot, kind of making a sketch or whatever of where things were. And then while you're doing that, you know, think about maybe what is still there that you never got harvested because maybe you don't really like it or you grew too much of it or it was kind of a crop failure, all of those things. And then put that into your thinking for the next year because, A, if you don't like something and you have really limited space—
Why do it?
Yeah. Why grow it to give it away to somebody or to just let it sit there? Neither one of those is really good. I've been blessed with relatively large plots, so, you know, I can indulge myself growing some things that I don't have any intention of eating. But for the average homeowner, that's not an option because they have a very limited space and very limited time to deal with it. So get that in mind as you're cleaning up, you know. Some of the things that are more disease prone, like tomatoes and peppers and some of those things, probably want to get those plants, the dead plants, out and don't compost them and you want to remove as much of the contamination for the next year, the spores of fungal diseases, for example. Just get them away. Some of the other things that don't typically have disease problems, you can just till them in or compost them or do whatever, but you have to kind of develop a feel for that. If you had a disease problem on something, definitely get rid of the plant debris from that.
So if we had an area this year, it was our first time doing a vegetable garden, and we found an area that the tomatoes grew amazingly well, your advice is that if possible, if we have somewhere else that has enough light, we should try and put them somewhere else, not go, hey, they worked so well this year, let's do it again.
Yes. Keep it in mind, and on a 3 or 4 year rotation, get them back in that location. But if you have tomatoes, peppers, eggplants, all those things in the nightshade family are pretty much all susceptible to a similar group of diseases. And so if you can stand it, move them somewhere else. If it's literally the only place you have, then you can do some things like heavy mulching so that spores don't splash up from the soil and do some other things. But typically it's not a good idea to plant things over and over in the same place because pretty often you're going to wind up with problems at some point.
Okay. If you plant something that didn't work out for you, but you really like it, it's something that you really like, do you try again or do you say, you know what, let's just try something completely different?
It would depend a little bit. This year with the drought, some of the things that I have traditionally done exceptionally well with, like melons and some other things, just didn't have the water when they were trying to mature. So I had really good watermelons, but they were maybe only 3 or 4 inches in diameter and not very many of them, where usually I would have, you know, 25 or 30 pound watermelons that, mm-hmm. that I share with people in my old apartment. And we have little watermelon feasts, and it just didn't happen this year. And so when it's something that I know I can grow, if things cooperate, definitely I'll do that again. If okay. there's something that I've tried for the first time and it doesn't work out, then it'll depend on how I think the failure came about. If it's because it doesn't match our climate particularly well, then maybe I'll just let it go. Although, with my level of skill and experience, I would tend to say you're not going to defeat me that easily, and try it at least once more.
Okay, forge ahead.
That was tongue in cheek, by the way. if you can't tell when you're listening to this.
So you've got your seed list together. You've gone and drawn up your plan. And just as a rule of thumb, let's say tomatoes, because that was the one I had. I just had no idea tomato plants grew so big. So rule of thumb, let's choose romaine tomatoes, buy the little plants. How much do you leave between each plant?
Well, specifically with Roma tomatoes, uh-huh. they don't get as large as some other types. They are determinate, so they only grow so high and then stop growing any taller. So those you could probably space at 3 to 4 feet, and, you know, 3 to 4 feet in all directions would do. I would tend to, you know, because I have space enough, I tend to leave wider aisles so that I'm not getting mangled by tomato foliage when I'm trying to pick tomatoes.
Mm-hmm.
And then if you go to something that's an indeterminate type that's going to grow 5, 6, 8 feet tall, at least 4 feet between plants. And
so that 1 foot I put between my plants probably explains why I was attacked.
Yeah. Unless you have, you know, some of the really super dwarfs, like maybe a patio tomato that's designed for growing in a pot, or the Tom Thumb, which is a cute little thing that is cute but doesn't, you know, really make a lot of little cherry tomatoes, but it's cute.
Good to know.
Even some of the determinate tomatoes are very vigorous, mm-hmm. and though they only may grow 4.5 or 5 feet tall,
they can
spread out sideways. And air circulation is also really important to disease control. So,
okay. Well, good to know. I know that for next year.
Okay.
But at least I know I can grow them. So do you always try something new?
It's kind of in my nature to either look at new varieties of the mm-hmm. same things, or there's still, you know, as I look through old vegetable books and things, occasionally there's something that I haven't ever tried at all. Skirret comes to mind. I don't know.
What is skirret?
It's something I've never tried. It's kind of an odd thing that I think might have had some popularity back in colonial times here.
Is it a leaf? What is it?
I think you eat the roots.
Oh.
They have kind of not real huge, but fleshy little roots that you eat. It's skirret, and that's one that I've seen growing at like historical gardens, rarely, and it's one that I've never tried to grow. And maybe I don't need to, is why I haven't done it. But if you've been doing this for a lifetime, which I have, I grew my first nasturtiums and radishes when I was 3 years old. And who knows what I did before. I probably was picking potato bugs before that. So in the course of things, that gives me 60-some years of doing it. And so, you know, and then fortunately I had a job here where I was able to trial things and have 150 varieties of potatoes.
Sure.
Or 70 or 80 varieties of sweet potatoes, or 85 or 90 varieties of heirloom tomatoes. You know, I was able to do that within my program here. So in that way, I'm kind of spoiled, because I was able to just indulge that need to see all these different things and what they really were like.
Mm-hmm. And decide what you really wanted to grow at home, right?
That's true. This past year, I basically grew only one heirloom tomato, which of all my years of working with them was the one that I really wanted to grow and save seed from and keep going. So,
okay. Now, what is the earliest time, if you're not growing things indoors, when do you recommend that people start putting things out into the garden, planting them into the garden? And is there any prep work that people need to do to the area before they put something in the ground?
Well, it's, you know, as we look at the entire Mid-American gardener region, you know, it's going to depend. And it's also going to depend on how the season breaks. Some years we get into early March and the temperature goes up and the soil dries out, and it would be a great time to get some things going. Spinach you can put in pretty much any time. If the soil has worked in the fall, I know people who will sow lettuce seed on top of the snow and just let it kind of sow itself as the snow melts into the pre-prepared bed. Radishes handle that pretty well. I would plant those in the soil as opposed to on the snow. But some of those cold season things can go in really early. Onions. The caveat with onions would be if they get too big and then get really cold, it kind of convinces them that they had a winter and they might want to shoot up a seed stalk, which you really don't want. Sowing onion seeds, if there's some variety that you can't find any other way but by seed, you want to get those going as early as you can get the soil work. So through most of our area, that would probably be March. Maybe as we go into the southern part of this area, occasionally it might warm up and dry out enough to do that at the end of February as we get considerably south of here. I know as I've traveled the state of Illinois, which is, if you've ever looked at a map, is pretty incredibly long. We go from southern Wisconsin clear down to almost to Memphis, Tennessee. So what happens up in Rockford, Illinois, and what happens in Caro, Illinois are very different. But the cue would be as the soil dries out and starts to get mellow and you can work it. You don't want to go out there with a chisel, or you don't want to go out there and play in the mud just for the sake of doing something.
Okay.
So the soil has a way of kind of telling an experienced gardener, particularly, okay, I'm ready. We're good to go. And then you have to kind of, you know, find a good reference or whatever to know what is a cold season vegetable, what's a cool season vegetable. And there's kind of transitional vegetables, and then there's the warm season stuff.
And talking of inexperienced gardeners, if 2019 is going to be their first attempt at putting together a vegetable garden, can you name 3 to 5 things that are relatively easy to grow?
Sure. Potatoes come to mind. Some people would say they take more space than they're worth, but potatoes from the soil where you are seem to always taste better than commercial potatoes.
Mm-hmm.
Mine particularly because I've eaten them from the same soil my whole life, and they just taste like potatoes. And when they're from any other soil than that, they're a little off.
Mm-hmm.
You know, plus I don't use herbicides and sprout inhibitors and all those kinds of things that you might find in grocery store potatoes. So there's that. Tomatoes, they're probably the number one home garden crop. There's a song about homegrown tomatoes that waxes very nostalgic and
can you sing it for us? Come on, I know you love to sing.
I do, but I didn't bring the lyrics.
And oh.
They're kind of complicated.
Okay.
Homegrown tomatoes, homegrown tomatoes, nothing in the world like homegrown tomatoes. It just goes on like that, and
they're just
verses of it. And it's true to some extent, particularly with the older varieties where flavor and juiciness and all those kinds of things, they may not be the prettiest tomatoes in the universe, but that flavor, once you're hooked on that, you really can't go back to those wet cardboard ones that are gassed to turn color in the winter.
Right.
What else? Early in the spring, radishes are about as easy as it gets. You put the seeds in the soil. Probably less than 30 days later, you have radishes.
That quickly?
No, they're incredibly quickly, and quick and just really easy. What else?
I would like to add that jalapeno peppers, as grew, we'd never done it before, so many, or up until probably a month ago, we have a bag of frozen them. We froze a lot of them. Yeah, they were very easy.
My barber approached me and said, "Boy, I really need a bushel of jalapeno peppers." So it was a process. The first year I grew a few varieties and took them to him, and he said, "Oh, that's the one." So the next year I did 50 plants because I wasn't sure how many plants it took to make a bushel.
Right.
Well, they did really well. I got through one half of them, one row. They were in two rows side by side. And I had two bushels plus a few more. And I found out that, at least for that particular variety, there's something like 450 jalapenos in a bushel.
Oh, my gosh.
So they are incredibly productive. This happened to be a hybrid called El Jefe, the boss. he loved that, and then he had this jardinière that somebody's grandmother had made. And for some reason, the recipe called for a bushel of jalapenos, and apparently he wasn't good at math because he didn't want to do a half bushel's worth of everything, cut everything in half. He didn't want to do that. So hopefully he's got that on the shelf and is still enjoying that because that was a couple of years ago now. But jalapenos, generally peppers are not one of the easiest things. Mm-hmm. I've had a lot of trouble with bacterial spot and speck the last few years. Not so much this year because it was so dry. But in other years, especially if a windy thunderstorm comes through and kind of damages the leaves a little bit, bacteria need some sort of a wound to get in on. And so that has been a bit of a problem. I'm trying to think what else.
Give us one more.
One more. Well, If you can get it in early, spinach is wonderful. From the middle of Mid-America south, you can actually sow it in the fall, give it a little protection, and then it gets off and growing early in the spring, or as early as you can get out to put it in the soil. Spinach works really well.
And that would be a seed?
Yes.
Okay.
Spinach seeds.
That's it? You've got color, you've got variety. It's perfect.
And I love carrots, but carrots can be a heartbreaker because they come up and they're just puny little guys. And the weeds just overtake them, and you find yourself on your hands and knees picking weeds with the tips of your fingers, trying to save the poor little carrot plants, which don't have the sense to root in and get going.
Oh, that sounds like hard work for beginners.
It is absolutely. I love carrots. I love homegrown carrots. I love the thought, at least, of all the colors of carrots that there are now, because you can kind of pick. You want anthocyanin? Do you want beta carotene? What phytochemicals do you want? But through that first month, at least from when you put the seeds in the ground, they're kind of a pain, at least where I'm growing. Maybe that's because the weeds get going too much and I have too much of a weed seed bank around them. But if I can get them past that point, it's great. This year, we seem to have an early hot spell. And not only did they get weedy, they also kind of cooked because the soil temperature got too high and they're just not
right.
They're just not very robust when they start out. Once they get that taproot in the ground and get going, they're fine, but they might be something that you might not want to try the first time because they might put you off of it because it's
right.
So much work.
So disheartening.
Yeah, it's like all those kids that were forced to go out and weed the garden who then think they hate gardening and they hate vegetables and they hate everything about it when in fact they might have enjoyed it if they'd started off. They not had the whip cracked quite so hard over their heads.
Well, that's a good variety. I would like to add, and I don't know, you can tell me when you would do it, two lots of parsley, one for you and one for the butterflies. When do you put parsley in?
Well, parsley is in the same plant family as carrots.
Mm-hmm.
And if anything, it germinates even more slowly. So parsley is something that I would at least consider trying to start in a cell pack, even if you're doing it outside, because you're working with a sterile medium that doesn't have any weed seeds in it. And the even under ideal conditions, the parsley, the fastest it might germinate is 2 weeks. It might take 3 or 4 weeks for it to germinate, and you can generate a whole lot of weeds in that length of time. So start them in a cell pack and then transplant them into the garden. The great thing about that is you get precision spacing. if you want them to be 8 inches apart, you can plant them 8 inches apart. Where if you put them in a row, you know, there'll probably be 3 or 4 here together in a clump and then a gap. And then
it
just seems like it's gotten kind of difficult to do that.
Okay. Well, listen, I have one last question for you. What is your favorite vegetable and why?
What is my favorite vegetable? Wow. I'm going to have to say potato. There was a reason I had 150 varieties and was a curator for the Seed Savers Exchange of old potato varieties. There's just something about them. You know, and as I said, I was picking potato bugs, and we always had a big potato patch. I had an older brother who was in 4-H and was like 12 and a half years older than I am. So he was heavily into that when I was still really small. And, you know, we just always had a big potato patch. And
Have a particular variety that you prefer?
If I could only grow one, I would probably grow Kennebec. It's a somewhat elongated, smooth white skin.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of good for, you can bake it, you can boil it, you can, you know, make potato salad with it. It's kind of a good all-purpose potato. It yields really well. It doesn't, it resists scab on the skin of the potatoes much better than, you know, like an Irish cobbler. So that's my all-time favorite. Of course, I like, you know, some of the bright reds because, you know, when you get those as small new potatoes, they're really fun. You
do a little
butter and parsley on those and you're good to go. Or when the first peas come in and you shell those, you do cream peas and small potatoes.
It's nearly dinner time. We must end this, Chuck.
Before we salivate and short out the recording devices.
Thank you so much for coming in again, Chuck. It has been wonderful to see you.
Well, it's been a pleasure working with you here at the station.
Thank you. Many thanks to you, our listeners, for joining us for another episode of the Mid-American Gardener podcast. It is with a heavy heart that I must tell you that this will be my last program at WILL. I have loved being a part of the MAG family. I have learned a lot, and I have tried very hard to follow through and actually put into practice what I've learned. I didn't know anything when I started at WILL, and I am leaving with a love of gardening. Mid-American Gardener is a production of Illinois Public Media. This episode was produced and hosted by me, Victoria Shepherd. Executive producer was Lisa Braltz. Find Mid-American Gardener on the web at midamericangardener.org, where you can stream the program as many times as you like. And of course, you can subscribe via Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, and the NPR One app. If you have any gardening questions for the future inclusion on either the TV show or podcast, email us at yourgarden@gmail.com. Message via Facebook or call and leave a voicemail at 217-300-8224. Thanks again to Chuck Voigt. If you would like to stay in touch with me or find out what I'm doing, please feel free to reach out to me at victoria-shepherd.com. That's S-H-E-P-H-E-R-D. I would like to wish everyone a wonderful holiday season and best wishes for 2019. Thank you.